Yes, that's right. This is Pedro Reyes and a special edition of Tierra Alerta right here on La Onda Bajita. Yes, that's right. We are here on Tierra Alerta tonight, and we will be speaking with Nellis Kennedy from Honor the Earth. From the front lines, she'll be telling us about the dangerous pipeline stated to go through Canadian tribal land and innovative new project bringing solar heaters to reservations. In addition, we'll be hearing from Dan Jacobson of Environment California about the potential closing of 220 parks, state parks, in the next couple of weeks out of 279 all across the state of California. And right now, I actually want to welcome Nellis, who's on the phone with me right here. Nellis, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Hi.
How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
It's going well. I just want to say real quickly hello to La Brava and Tara out there, who are actually the hostesses of this show, and I'm just here filling in for them for this evening. And so let's go ahead and get started with, so tell us a little bit about what Honor the Earth and the mission is.
It sounds great. Like you said, my name is Nellis Kennedy. I work for Honor the Earth, and we're an organization that was founded in 1993 to address a lot of the issues facing Native communities, environmental issues specifically. And I would say that our work is twofold, in the sense that we help fight some of the bad projects that are impacting Native communities, things like uranium mining or coal mining, oil pipelines, while also promoting alternatives to those things, like solar power and wind power.
Yes, that's right. So why don't we tell us a little bit about the dirty projects you oppose, and what is happening with the tar sands in Canada and your work with tribal reservations?
Okay, great. The tar sands is a major project going on in Canada, in Alberta. It's been dubbed one of the most destructive projects on Earth. It's caused mass deforestation and contamination of water, and it's directly impacting Indigenous nations in Canada, as well as the Indigenous populations here in the U.S. The oil that's pumped from Canada goes into the U.S. and through many different pipelines. And one of the pipelines that we're helping fight right now, although we're opposing all of them, but one of the ones that we've been focusing on is the Enbridge pipeline. And that's being proposed to pass through the Leech Lake Tribal Reservation, as well as the Fond du Lac Tribal Reservation. So we've been actively working to help stop fight those. We've come across our own barriers. As far as I know, the tribes have already approved those, but we're still working with the grassroots groups to try and get referendum votes passed and making other tribes aware of any pipelines that might be coming their way.
So tell us, what are some of the impacts that some of the folks have seen already or witnessed, or, just like basically are observing as it's happening?
The Leech Lake tribe, the Enbridge already has some pipelines that are running through there, and they're already suffering from past spills that have occurred. And those spills that have occurred, I'm guessing that was around probably in the past 6 years, those still haven't been cleaned up. So the Leech Lake people are already suffering from spills, oil spills there. And for another pipeline to go through, they're only being exposed to more risks to pipeline spills.
Yes, that's right. And so basically these pipelines are going to be affecting the environment, the food, and the river and the water that they're going through as well?
Absolutely. There's for significant portions of the pipeline, they're going to have to be cutting down trees. And the spills that are already there, they're already contaminating the water, and the ecological impacts can be significant. No major restoration projects have started. The Enbridge company is saying that they're studying those spills, but nothing has yet been done to clean them up.
That's right. And so you're saying that basically you're also trying to involve the grassroots parts of the tribal sectors, right, to be able to object to these pipelines that are happening, because you're saying the tribal government already agreed to have the pipes go through them?
Yes, that's right. A lot of the tribal members, it's a matter of making them aware of what's happening also. Sometimes things can pass through different governments, tribal governments, and the people aren't fully aware of what that means or how it might affect them. So one of the things that we've looked at doing is helping make the Leech Lake people aware of what will happen with this pipeline and getting them involved and hearing their voices, because after all, it's going to impact them first, since it is on their reservation running through their land and where their families live. And so they've become a really powerful voice in this, so we're helping work with them.
And one of the ways you're helping work with them is also to educate the folks locally of the tribes to basically do solar projects, right, and work with solar power. And one of those instruments is the heaters, right?
Yes.
Can you tell us how that becomes a part of the learning process, as well as spreading the knowledge about what's really happening with the pipelines?
Absolutely. Sometimes it's a sad story, but it's true, is that tribes find themselves in situations where situations of poverty, where they feel that they need to enter into agreements with oil pipelines or coal plants, things like Desert Rock, the coal plant that's being proposed out at Navajo right now, and they find themselves needing that money, and so they feel like they're being pushed into dirty projects. So one of the things that Honor the Earth does is help them realize that there are alternatives out there that are clean, that they don't have to sacrifice the purity of their land or their water or their air to do that. And the solar heaters is part of that. We work with a couple of different groups with our solar air heaters. We work with the Rural Renewable Energy Alliance, REAL, in Minnesota, and then we also work with Lakota Solar Enterprises through Henry Red Cloud. And those solar air heaters, they're clean, they're efficient, they can cut back your heating bills by 35%, almost 40% in some cases. And that's really important to the isolated communities out here in the Midwest, because they experience frigid winters, really cold winters. I just moved out here, so I know that for a fact.
Yes, that's right. And so basically you guys are working with solar power to create power, solar power heaters, and that way you can be able to save energy as well as the environmental factor that goes along with the energy use. Can you tell us, how is this a project for indigenous, a model for indigenous communities?
Absolutely. Honor the Earth just got back from a solar heater installation out at the Yankton Reservation. And there we had a training and an installation out there that helped train many tribal leaders that came out from different communities to come and find out more about them and train them how to install them, how they're put together, and connecting them with the right people so that they can take that knowledge back to their communities and implement them on their own.
And talking about knowledge going back into the community, you guys also have a solar-powered radio station as well, from what I understand.
A wind-powered radio station.
A wind-powered radio station, sorry.
Yes,
can you tell us about that and how that came to evolve?
Absolutely. In June of last year, we worked with the Keeley Radio Station, the voice of the Lakota Nation, out at the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. And there we installed, along with IQU, the Intertribal Council on Utility Policy, we worked with them to put up a 65-kilowatt Nord tank tower. And that wind turbine is producing 92,000 kilowatt hours per year, and it's powering the radio station. And the radio station itself is the largest energy consumer on that reservation. So we've taken care of a major part of that utility load.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, it is a major part of the utility load, because radio stations do require a lot of energy as well. And in order to transmit, even in KPFA, we still need a lot of, you know, funders to fund us and enable to keep going all year round. So I could just imagine how helpful it is to actually have a solar-powered radio station, a wind-powered radio station that can actually be used for the community.
Absolutely. And, you know, here at my office here on the White Earth Reservation, Callaway, Minnesota, we've been putting together a really great project, and that's installing a 75-kilowatt lowland turbine just outside my office, and that's going to power our entire building, and the surplus of that power is going to be sold back to the utility companies. But it's a really good thing. It's very exciting, and like you said, that knowledge can be used, and we're creating step-by-step process for tribes to look at so that they can start their own wind projects, because that's the whole purpose anyway.
So once again, the pipelines are also another sort of like issue that is the radio station also taking that up on, you know, the airwaves as well, and bringing it out to the communities where the radio station is?
You know, I don't know if that particular radio station is. I'm not sure what they've done, but I know with Honor the Earth, we've written a few different articles that have gone out in several different newspapers about the tar sands, so that we can help make it not just an issue within the Leech Lake community or the Fond du Lac community, but statewide and nationwide, and we're hoping to put out another one here pretty soon. So
that's right. And so how can actually, if people want to know more about it, and if they want to get involved and help spread the word, how can they do that?
Look around you. That would be the best way. The tar sands oil is being proposed to be pumped everywhere. So find out where those pipelines are going to be, and follow those and see how you can get involved. I know that there's a really big movement within landowners' rights, looking at whether or not claims can be made in that sense. Or contact your representatives and your senators and let them know how you feel about tar sands oil and that you don't want it here.
And then does Honor the Earth have a website they can go and check out?
Absolutely. We just launched a new website. If you go to www.honorearth.org.
Wonderful. Well, we want to thank you for taking some time out of your organizing. And once again, we were speaking with Nellis Kennedy from Honor the Earth. Is there any last words or comments you would like to let the folks or the audience know?
Just go out there and do the best that you can. That's all we can all do, and together we'll make a really big difference.
Right on. Well, thank you very much, Nellis. And once again, we hope, people start hearing more about this and start taking more action on it as well. So thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
And now we're going to switch gears, come back to California, and we're going to be talking to folks from the Environment for California, Dan Jacobson. He's going to tell us about the 220 state parks that are going to be shutting down pretty soon out of the 279 that are available for everybody to use. Dan, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks so much for having me on today.
Yes, Dan. So tell us, first of all, you know, what's going on with this budget cut, and why are they trying to close 220 state parks?
Well, what the state government is trying to do is to figure out how the amount of money that it brings in every year with taxes and with other revenue sources can equal the amount of money that it spends in programs like schools and hospitals and state parks. And what they're finding is that this year, the amount of money that they're bringing in is not equal to the amount of money that all of the programs cost. So the state legislature and the governor and others are trying to figure out how can we reduce the amount of cost that it takes us to basically to run the state. And there's a lot of draconian cuts that are being made in all areas, but obviously one of the biggest cuts that's being made is the proposal to close 220 state parks.
Yes, that's right. And so basically what's going on is there's going to be 220 state parks closed across California out of the 279. Can you tell us what are some of the parks that will be closed?
Well, that's a good question. In your area, I was trying to put together a map or some sort of site. There's a great website that you can go to that you can look at. You can and you can put your clicker over some of the areas that you're concerned about, and it'll give you some of these places. But the Tamales State Beach is one that'll be closed. The Montara State Beach, which I think is fairly close. The Moss Landing, that's a little further south than you guys, but Mount Diablo State Park, There's a lot of people that do hikes and picnics and things like there. That one will be closed. The Mount Tamalpais, that one will be closed. Natural Bridges, that's a little further south from you guys, but that one will be closed. So there is a lot just in and around Marin in the Bay Area, further south, up north. Almost all the state parks that you would think about, the odds are the one that you want to go to, it'll be closed.
And I have an understanding that they already had a public hearing in Sacramento as well to actually go through with this process. Is there another hearing coming up anytime soon for the folks to actually attend and be able to be present?
There may be one. I mean, there's hearings going on this weekend, and that's when the budget committee is meeting. But if the budget gets adopted, if the recommendations from the committee get adopted, they'll still have to be approved by the governor. Last year at this time, the governor had proposed closing hundreds of state parks as well, but there was such an outrage from the public that both the governor and the state legislators took that proposal off the table. And, you know, there's a lot of outrage from the public on this issue right now, and so we're hoping, because, you know, obviously both Democrats and Republicans have a lot of state parks in their own districts, and people in every district really rely on state parks. We're hoping that legislators also take this proposal off the table. Just also, I mean, state parks are such a tiny, tiny percentage of the state budget that closing them, you know, is just going to save not very much, but the pain that it inflicts upon the quality of life that people in California can live is just obviously really big.
Yes, that's right. So can you tell us actually how much do parks actually generate income, or do they not?
Yeah, they actually do. There was a study that was just done the other day that found that that people who visit California state parks in an average year spend $4.32 billion per year in park-related expenditures. You know, and part of that is due that these state parks, you know, are really not just state parks for California, but they're some of the treasures of the country and of the whole world. And they get about 80 million visitors every single year. I'm sorry, about 75 million visitors every single year. And when those visitors come to the park, they spend, you know, on average about $57, $58 for each person who comes in. It's about $25 inside the park and about $33 outside the park. And that's, you know, ice cream and hats and souvenirs and camping tickets and camping equipment. And, you know, the parks really are a source of income for California, and that's why it's a real shame to see them close down like this.
What about the number 220? What was the rationale behind 220 out of 279?
I think what they were just doing is just looking and trying to figure out how much money that they could save. And at this point, the state is so desperate to basically balance its checkbook that they're just looking and trying to figure out, you know, if we can save a couple million dollars here, let's just do that. And then they go, oh, well, how many state parks is that? And I think what they're trying to look at is the state parks that don't bring in the greatest revenue. So if there's a particular park that makes a lot of money because there's a lot of tourists that go to that particular place, I think they've tried to keep that one off the list. But obviously, 220 out of 279 is an incredibly large percentage of state parks.
Yes, that's right. And also, so are you saying that the state will lose more income from closing parks than it would spend keeping them open?
Yeah, the state will lose the money that is generated from the tax dollars of people going to the parks, and, you know, that'll hurt us in the long run.
So how can people actually take action still and be able to, you know, keep all these state parks open?
Well, the best thing to do is contact the governor and contact your local state assembly member and your local state senator. You know, I think the best thing to do is just write them a letter. You can email them or you can just write them a letter and tell them about why the state parks are important to you. A lot of people this year, especially with the economy, are going to use the state parks more and more. They're doing what they call staycations, where people aren't going, you know, on big plane trips and flying around the country or going to exotic places, but they're staying right here in beautiful California. And just write your state legislator and to the governor and say, you know, this year the state park is more important than ever to me. And let them know that you use the state park, that you're concerned about the state park, and that closing it will see a lot of damage done to the park. And, you know, you got to remember, these are places that are set aside because they're so beautiful and they're so important to California's history that we've decided to set them aside, not for ourselves, but for generations, you know, 5, 10 generations into the future, so that they will not only know about California's history with the, you know, with the Indian Museum and with the railroad museums that are out there, and knowing about the cultural aspects of California, which are so important. But some of these places, there's no other place like this in the world. I mean, there's, you know, the Natural Bridges State Beach. There's nothing like that anywhere else in the world, and it's really our job and our responsibility to make sure that we're protecting and preserving these areas for future generations. And that's really what we have to communicate to our elected officials. And I think it's really important. We all know that this is a horrible, horrible economic times for us. I mean, this is, you know, the state is faced with some unbelievably tough decisions about, you know, keeping hospitals open and schools and nursing facilities. And Lord knows it is really, really hard to be a state legislator right now. It's really hard to be the governor. But we can't just protect our environmental treasures when times are good.
So can you tell the folks once again, Dan, about when the parks will be closed for sure, and when they close down, do you really think folks will end up being fined for trespassing?
Well, it's hard to say exactly when they'll shut down because, you know, the budget negotiations are still going on. So, but if it passes, it'll be in the next, you know, 4 to 8 weeks potentially. So it'll be right at the height of the summer as people are packing up their family and trying to get away. Do I think people will be fined for trespassing? Yeah, I think so. I think you don't want to test the law on this. I think it also could be dangerous because once state parks close, I think you're going to have a lot of criminals move in and take advantage of that unsupervised area. And so I don't, you know, and if you're going to state beaches, I don't think it's a safe thing to do if you don't have lifeguards there. So it's, you know, it isn't just, you know, can you get away with sneaking into the state park and enjoying a quick hike? I think there's real safety concerns that you have to think about before you do something like that.
That's right, because there ain't no more park rangers to actually look after the park, right? Because that's part of the staff that, you know, is taking care of the state parks, right?
That's exactly right. It's, you know, those park rangers do more than just point out the difference between the oak and the pine. They're really there to maintain the quality of life inside that state park. And oftentimes that quality of life means, you know, protecting people if they get lost in the woods, you know, making sure that they're, you know, if there's three campers that went in, there's three campers that come out. You know,
right.
One of the great things about California is it's, you know, it's still really natural out there. And that means that if you're going to go out into the woods or if you're going to go swimming on the beaches, you really need to take extra precaution, and, you know, you got to be careful out there.
So once again, can you tell the folks where they can find more information as well as, you know, become a part of this process if they want to get involved or volunteer in some way?
Yeah, there's two great websites to go to. The first is you can just go to our website, which is www.environmentcalifornia. And if you just go to the Take Action section under Preservation, we have a website there that's just dedicated to helping people out. So that's www.environmentcalifornia.org, and that's a great place to go. The other is the California State Parks Foundation, and that's www.calparks.org. So that's calparks.org. And they have a ton of great information here. They've got interactive maps, and they've also got opportunities to write to the governor and to write to your legislators. But those are two great websites that you can go to. You can get all the information that you need. Time is of the essence on this one.
Well, We want to thank you very much, Dan Jacobson of Environment California, and, you know, for giving us this information and for letting the folks know about what's really happening with the state parks across California. It's very important that folks get out there and, you know, mobilize around this issue as well, because it could affect our future. It could affect the way of lifestyle here in California itself, and as we know, the environment as well. And so once again, Dan Jacobson, thank you very much. And is there any last words or comments you would like to say to the audience listening?
I'd just like to say thank you very much. There's a lot you could talk about on a Friday night, and taking the opportunity to talk about organizing and talking about the environment, I think is a great thing to do.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, and have a good night.
Thank you.